Good evening. This is Mae Bressel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 803, April the 27th, 1987. For those of you who hear World Watchers live from Kazoo, where it emanates, I want to remind you one more time, the program begins 1 hour earlier next week. World Watchers is on from 7 to 9 p.m. We start earlier. I don't want you to miss a single minute of the broadcast. The Wall Street Journal has a very long article today about an investigation that's been going on for 5 years in Italy regarding the Vatican Bank and the role it played in the fall of the Italian Banco Ambrosiano. And it seems that the shell companies and the major company in Panama, United Trading, was actually Vatican-owned, and that the scandal of the merging of Banco Ambrosiano with the Vatican Bank, literally having the Vatican just about take it over, Italy's largest bank, had been going on for 10 years, from 1972 to 1982, when Roberta Calvi was murdered in London and the Banco Ambrosiano collapsed. The powers that be were trying to make it look as if the Vatican was on the fringe and didn't have a major role in this entire scandal. But the Italian government, as I say, has been working for many years now, investigating their Bahamas branch, the relationship of the Vatican to that, money that was put into subsidiaries, and particularly from Peru, millions of dollars into Panama. Panama has been the center of a lot of intrigue and banking, and how this will connect to a lot of other matters that I've discussed on World Watchers, we will wait and see. But I know that it is a very important link to the way terrorist groups or military dictatorships and fascism are funded. There's a new book out that I read a great part of it this weekend called Hot Money and the Politics of Debt. It's by R.T. Naylor, Associate Professor of Economics from McGill University, published by Simon & Schuster. And on the cover, it has a red cover with large letters, "What links the Mafia, the Vatican, the Moonies, the CIA, the cocaine barons, the banks, and you? Hot Money and the Politics of Debt." About all they've left out of there are the Masons, the Israeli Mossad, and the Nazi Martin Bormann connections, those banking connections, which are very, very big. But it looks a little bit like World Watchers to see Mafia, Vatican, Mooney, CIA, and cocaine, and banks all on the cover of a very nicely designed book. Nip Tuck and David Emery talk about these interconnecting links very often, and our broadcast, probably the only two on the radio in America that give so much time to explain and detail the links of these organizations to each other. One of the kingpins to this book and to all the books regarding Panamanian money, the Vatican, death squads, narcotics traffic, and so forth, and relationships to Reverend Moon, the Mafia. One of the big kingpins, of course, is Robert Vesco. He is linked to many of the major actors of the Iran-Contra affair, the investigators of the Iran-Contra affair, the banking connections. And I'll detail maybe one whole broadcast. I could do endless ones on Vesco, and I have many books on Vesco, but he's very much part of that milieu that this book is about. The book goes into the investments of Meyer Lansky and Lucky Luciano as soon as World War II was over, their role with Batista in Cuba. And in the Bahamas came Robert Vesco with the investment overseas, several hundred million dollars, working with Bernie Kornfield. And, of course, those are the banks of Mr. Zucker, Willard Zucker, CFR, the accounts of Mr. General Secord and Albert Hakim and Theodore Shackley of the CIA. And the connection of the Swiss banks to Panama is identical to Paul Marcinkus and the Vatican banks in Panama. And all of these people were and have been working together. In fact, in this book, the author describes, before seeking asylum in the Switzerland of Americas, Robert Vesco pondered the state of offshore world. So too did one of his consultants, Richard Allen, who then became National Security Advisor under Ronald Reagan. He describes him as an expert in the emerging law of tax havens and offshore centers. And he was a top aide to Henry Kissinger. Always Kissinger, Haig, and the proteges of Fritz Kramer come into this milieu. And this book goes into Richard Allen and Robert Vesco and their associations. And, of course, they were closely linked to William Casey, a Knight of Malta, knighted by the Vatican. And it has quite a bit of detail about Mitchell Werbel and Vesco And I mention it because the book links so many areas together. And Vesco, of course, is tied to the Iran-Contra affair. And he resides, strangely enough, in Cuba, the Cuba of Fidel Castro at the present time. A very good friend of mine passed away just 2 days ago. I've referred to him many times on these broadcasts, Edward Simpson Callis, and he died of cancer. And I met him quite a few years ago when Ray Fabrizio and I were doing a course, two courses at MPC on political assassinations, and we learned that Dr. Callis was living in Monterey. Many of you who've been in my home have met him here and his family. He was a psychologist in charge of Sirhan Sirhan. He was the chief psychologist at San Quentin Prison. When Sirhan was sent there following his conviction for having killed Robert Kennedy, Ed was asked to leave San Quentin or leave the prisoner who he was taking care of, Sirhan Sirhan, when he recognized that Sirhan had been programmed in a hypnotic state and that he had the possibility of deprogramming him and working with Sirhan and maybe unfolding the drama of how he got in the Ambassador Hotel, why he was there. So Dr. Simpson Callis sent for all the transcripts of the trial and got the transcripts and is on record for believing that Dr. Diamond, another psychiatrist, had programmed Sirhan to believe that he had killed Robert Kennedy. He moved from the San Francisco area here to Monterey, and after I learned that he was here, as I say, we got to be very good friends. And there are books out on the assassination of Robert Kennedy where there are references to Dr. Simpson Callis. I believe Bill Turner's book mentions him, and there are other books. And I'm not sure of this. I know there was a book, The Manchurian Candidate, that suggested people could be hypnotized to kill political leaders and be triggered off by the sight of something. But I believe Dr. Edward Simpson Callis was the first psychologist in the United States to link the hypnosis and the structuring of the mind of an alleged assassin, particularly killing Robert Kennedy, who wanted to be president of the United States. He was murdered the night of his primary victory. I believe he was the first person to suggest that there was this hypnotized assassin and one of the few who had the opportunity to work with this person and was very familiar with his case and believed very strongly that Sirhan did not kill Robert Kennedy, that he was programmed, and that if the right people were in touch with him, he could be broken out of the hypnotic state. But anybody who believes that and works with him is not allowed to work with him any longer. And he left working for the prison system at that point. As I say, I moved down here to Monterey. I've been talking the last few weeks about persons arrested, indicted, fascists that are being rounded up. And every week I add a new one. Several weeks ago, I added Archbishop Paul Marcinkus and two of his Vatican friends who they hide inside the Vatican waiting for the Italian government to have them delivered by the Pope, which, of course, he isn't going to do. He's not going to open up that ball of wax. And I referred to the arrest of Reverend Potter Gale, Juan Lopez Rega, Franklin Camper, who was found guilty of firebombing in Los Angeles, Francesco Pazienza, Stefano Della Calle, Carlos Letter Rivas, and Paul Marcinkus and his Vatican buddies who are hiding. Now, this week, there's been a trial going on, a long trial, but this week, there was an indictment for murder and plotting to overthrow the United States for 15 white supremacists, which is a very interesting case. They've been charged with trying to overthrow our government and of murdering radio talk show host Mr. Berg. Now, the first name in the indictment is Richard Gernt Butler, 69, of Idaho, a leader of the Aryan Nations Church. And, of course, I've done many broadcasts on this particular person. Nine others are affiliated with the Aryan Nations and groups such as the Order and the Klan. Most of you have seen the indictment. The Order is described as a group put together by William Pierce of Arlington, Virginia. Interestingly enough, he hasn't been indicted. Pierce worked for the Air Force, and he worked for United Technology and took the money from United Technology to start the Nazi Party. He changed the name. So it wouldn't appear just as the Nazi Party, and he has a group in Arlington, Virginia. He took over from the late Rockwell, who was murdered, who ran the Nazi Party. The person that had killed Robert Kennedy, most of the researchers believe, is Thane Caesar, a man who worked in Burbank and worked on the YouTube program and worked with Richard Butler, the same person who's been indicted this week. Thane Caesar has never been really questioned in a court of law. He's been interviewed by Ted Chirac, who made a movie with his disgusting statements about blacks and so forth. Thane Caesar was a guard at Lockheed, moonlighting when he was standing behind Robert Kennedy, fell to the ground, let out some bullets out of his gun, and fled. And Sirhan took the rap, and it was Ed Simpson Kalas who recognized the fact that it was not Sirhan who had killed Robert Kennedy. So it's interesting that just days apart, or practically on the same day that Dr. Simpson Kalas passed away, the person who actually had fired a gun behind Robert Kennedy that was exactly where the autopsy report said the fatal bullet came from, the man, Thane Caesar, worked with his co-partner, the Robert Butler, who went on to he went to Idaho and formed the Aryan Nations. He went from the U-2 program and the Lockheed Aerospace up to Idaho, and now he has been charged with trying to overthrow the country. Now, his co-partner, by killing Robert Kennedy, assured the position of presidency for Richard Nixon for that 1968 election. And all of the books on espionage of Nixon and Ronald Reagan show that the beginning of turning the National Security Council into a secret private army, removing it from Congress, having its own rules and laws, began as soon as Richard Nixon was assured the presidency, which he wanted in 1960 and lost to President Kennedy. And then Ronald Reagan, when he came into power, continued exactly what Richard Nixon was doing up till the time he was removed because of the Watergate scandals. So it's kind of interesting, I think, in real synchronicity, that Richard Butler has been indicted for murder and planning to overthrow the country, and his cohort down at Lockheed while he's off also had the same intentions, and we almost got there. As a matter of fact, I was reading an article this week by Secretary of Defense James Schlesinger, who also is a director of the CIA, who feared that Richard Nixon was going to have a military coup in 1972, and that would be consistent with the work of the Aryan Nations or the purposes that Thane Caesar had for killing Robert Kennedy. And Richard Butler had the same goal and worked with the same people. So there's an overlaying there of much more than just synchronicity. These people have identifiable positions and states of mind and do happen to work together. If you study the connecting tissues, and I've done broadcasts on Richard Butler and the Aryan Nations and his links to Ronald Reagan in California and Edgar Eugene Bradley and so forth. So a part of our era has gone with a courageous man like Ed Simpson Kalas speaking up. No other doctor I know of who's treated an alleged assassin has had the courage to come forward and say these things. Now, I have a long list of articles that I wanted to run through because the Condrygate hearings begin next week on May the 6th, but there was one that's a first, and I'm going to spend as much time as necessary to detail this with you because it came over the San Jose Mercury News, Washington Bureau, didn't make the wire services, so I know that many of you people that listen to World Watchers and get the tapes are not lucky enough to get their hands on this article, or you get a short version. If you send a self-addressed stamped envelope and 25 cents for copying, I'll send you the full two-page article because it's 10 by 14, two pages, a long story. And as I say, this is a first again, like Dr. Edward Simpson's Kalas coming forward. This is a first by two people who worked with the Defense Department, CIA, and State Department, who have come forward to give us a view of working specifically inside the Reagan administration, although what they're talking about has gone on for a long, long time before. The title of the article is Two Claim Firm Did Covert U.S. Jobs. That's the article. It's written by Frank Grieve, Matthew Purdy, and Mark Fazziola. It came out San Jose Mercury, April 26, 1987. And I outlined this article for you. These men were from the Pentagon intelligence. They were specialists. And persons inside the Pentagon that worked with them urged them to have a private company formed in Texas that would, and this is quotes, mount several secret operations that they deemed too sensitive for direct government involvement, including the sale of arms for an aborted 1982 plot to kill Ayatollah Khomeini. Now, in political assassination research, people say, well, where's the smoking gun? Where's the paper? Where's the canceled check for the contract? It doesn't work that way at all. The persons who I've studied their murders, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers, and so forth, there is no signed contract. What happens is that the intelligence community gives to private companies the go-ahead to do things which, these are their words, are too sensitive for direct government involvement. And we see this being a better view of it even during Contra-Iran affair than we got during the Watergate hearings. There was plenty to lead us to that direction, but this is current, and these men worked for Ronald Reagan. The article says the private Texas company officials won clearance from Pentagon officials for the purposes of vigilante-style schemes, and they allegedly were supposed to kill drug smugglers in Peru, Honduras, Belize, and the Caribbean. Now, the cover story is always something very grand, like we want to stop drugs, we want to kill drug dealers, but that's only a passing excuse, because what these people really did was set up death squads in these countries. It wasn't so much for drugs as to divide the money from the drugs, but to kill political persons who were a pain in the neck. I've got to watch these words on the radio now. I usually do pretty good. To kill those persons who are bothering the dictators to assure that the dictators can stay in power, or else they were used to overthrow countries to put the dictators back in power. The private Texas firm is known as, it closed in 1984, as Peregrine, P-E-R-E-G-R-I-N-E, Peregrine International Associates of Dallas, Texas. A lot of action, of course, takes place in Dallas, Texas. They were encouraged to arm and train Nicaragua Contra rebels. They worked with the elite military commando units in El Salvador, Honduras, and Peru. So you know they weren't after drug dealers, because a big hunk of the drug traffic, if you've been reading your articles lately or continuously since the Iran-Contra arrests, drug havens were in Honduras, El Salvador, and Peru. So they weren't after the drug people. They were setting up elite military commando units. They said, our job was to do the things that the government could not be seen to be doing. That's a quotation of Gary Howard, the founder of Peregrine Associates. He said, our deal was that the private sector could handle lots of security missions abroad, and American boys wouldn't get killed, or if they did, there wouldn't be a fuss. And they spell out exactly how the National Security Council Defense Intelligence Agency works, do what the government can't do, and save the Americans, and if a few killed, there won't be any fuss. Now, 243 Marines were killed in Lebanon. Ronald Reagan got no fuss at all. Grenada fatalities, there were 18 Americans dead, 86 wounded, 123 Grenadian citizens killed in a mental hospital that was bombed, 36 Cubans killed, 57 Cubans wounded. Hardly a whisper from anybody about this slaughter. The TWA hijacking took place, and I have articles you've probably seen it. Maybe I'll have time to go to them. Robert McFarlane was meeting with the chief suspect of the TWA hijacking where an American was killed. And just last week I went into, and I want to do more details on it, the link of the terrorists and Mr. Abbas, who was masterminded the Aquila Laura incident where an American citizen was killed. Nothing happened. He was allowed to leave Italy and do his activities around the Middle East or wherever he wants. And in Pakistan, an American citizen was killed in September 86. Not a word about that, secret trials, and so forth. So what these people can do is handle missions abroad, even agent provocateur events such as, I believe, the Berlin Disco was, the TWA, the Aquila Laura. All the time there were incidences and reasons for me to believe they were agent provocateur actions. And then later the national security agents are meeting with these people and working with them, such as Robert McFarlane and Oliver North. And nothing is happening. The Americans could be killed, and nobody gets outraged at Ronald Reagan, which is the purpose of using these agent provocateurs and these teams. The article says Peregrine's executives believe their firm was the model for what became the Reagan administration's broad policy of carrying out politically unacceptable covert operations off the books. Now, that's their belief, that it was the model for the Reagan administration. But they're wrong about that. Ronald Reagan came into a system that was well set up. In the book published by the government, Report to the President by the Commission on CIA Activities Within the United States, published in June 1975, Ronald Reagan was on that commission. And in that book, The Government Investigations, page 250 to 272, there are BS explanations of the Kennedy assassination and the role of E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis. Ronald Reagan said on those reports, June 1975. Now, we're at 1987. There's a current Contragate suit filed by Daniel Sheehan of the Christic Institute versus General Richard Secord of the Pentagon, General John Singlaub, Albert Hakim, CIA agent Thomas Klein, CIA agent Theodore Shackley for drug running, assassination plots, actual murders, and included in the name of this indictment, and I've had this before, is Frank Fiorini on page 33. Fiorini is Frank Sturgis, the same Sturgis that Reagan was covering up in June of 75, and this is 12 years later, the same guy that Ronald Reagan was using, and as well as other members of the commission for covert actions. And Fiorini, according to the affidavits, and as I say, I've mentioned this before, and I'll keep referring to it, was hired by mobster Santos Trafficante, working for Meyer Lansky, a partner of Robert Vesco, under a private business. The business was Howard Hughes and Hughes Aircraft, the defense contractor. And it was from Hughes Aircraft and Lockheed that were making the U-2 planes together that Thane Caesar came from, the gentleman who worked with Ed Butler of the Aryan Nations when Robert Kennedy was killed. My point here is that it wasn't Reagan's policy to use dummy front companies as cover for business, for defense, Pentagon, and CIA, that this has been standard operating procedure since the end of World War II. Wild Bill Donovan and Alan Dulles set up companies and corporations and used existing companies and corporations such as ITT, General Motors, and so forth for espionage activities and the aircraft, particularly Adnan Khashoggi of Contragate fame was a CIA agent who worked with Lockheed and was involved with Lockheed scandals years ago. Now, UN Ambassador Vernon Walters was interviewed in San Francisco. This was August 22nd, 1986, a year ago. And he said, rightist dictators are no threat to the United States in Latin America. In other words, if they're not a threat to us, then they're good enough for the people. The question of slavery and economic poverty and no homes, health, or provisions for the native populations isn't his problem. If the dictatorship is good for the United States, it's no threat to us. So this policy of putting in dictatorships began right after World War II, and while the men from Paragon believed that their company was a model for Reagan's administration, Ronald Reagan just was continuing the policy, as I say, that had been going on a long time ago. The article says congressional investigators think that it was a pattern of using retired military personnel in secret contracts of what finally exploded in the Iran-Contra scandal. Now, they in their article say congressional investigators think it was this pattern of using retired personnel. Now, congressional persons have gone along with all of these activities year after year. People who've done research, written books, collected articles and books, so much good material, know that Congress has been part of the covert actions of the, quotes, retired military. They allow Colonel North to work with retired John Singlaub, to work with retired General Secord. These things were in the press for the last 2 and 3 years. The only reason this story broke open wasn't that they located retired military personnel on secret contracts. The reason these hearings are going to take place and the material is broken open, there were three reasons, and keep these clear as those monkeys begin investigating, and certainly a lot will come out. There were three reasons why they're going to this now. One was what Ronald Reagan referred to as that dirty rag in Lebanon, the newspaper that printed the story about Robert McFarlane and Michael Ledeen bringing weapons for Khomeini, and also for former members of the Shah Savak, while Reagan was calling Khomeini number one terrorist. The second reason was that Adnan Khashoggi and Mr. Furmark were going to blackmail William Casey of the CIA and the National Security Council because they had put up $10 million for the weapons to Iran instead of being paid back. The money was going to the Contras. And the third reason was that Eugene Hasenfass was shot down in Nicaragua and immediately mentioned the CIA, George Bush, Mr. Gomez-Rodriguez, who's in the news today, is working strongly with Oliver North, and he mentioned Mr. Cirilles, who masterminded the explosion of the airplane, the Air Cuba, linked to the CIA when George Bush was CIA director. So the congressional investigators have to fall into the classification of retired military personnel, which is okay. Let them expose as much as they want. The good thing about these incidences that force this open is that gentlemen such as Gary Howard, the founder of Peregrine, and his partner Ronald Tucker are willing to talk about their corporation and how the Defense Department works. And that's where we learn about these operations, not from congressional committee stupid questions, but from people who've been in the inside, such as Daniel Ellsberg telling us about the Pentagon Papers or these gentlemen. The San Jose Mercury article continues, Pentagon operated like a private CIA offering counterterrorist and counterinsurgency assistance to foreign countries. In 1982, they trained a commando group in Honduras. They had instructions in urban assault tactics, interrogation, how to capture suspects, demolition, sniper, and marksmanship. Howard and Tucker, according to this article in San Jose Mercury, are the first commando entrepreneurs to reveal the secret arrangements with the government. And this is how it worked. These were the men training in Honduras and going to many other countries. They were told where to go, to where to stay away from. But they're talking now, and one reason they said they're talking is that the federal government owes them $1.2 million they're not talking about, so they're ready to speak publicly. And that's what happened with Mr. Khashoggi and Mr. Furmark when their measly $10 million didn't come back to them. The allegations made by Howard and Tucker were confirmed, according to these authors, from the customs documents, from State Department records, FBI, customs, and military interviews. Much of the work is still classified. Howard and Tucker said they met all of the time in Washington, D.C., with Pentagon intelligence specialists, and they discussed the proposed missions that they were supposed to do that the government up front couldn't do. They met frequently with retired Army Lieutenant General Samuel V. Wilson, former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, currently an advisor to Secretary of the Defense Department Caspar Weinberger on special operations. The man who advised them works for Caspar Weinberger at the present time. Now, remember, General Daniel Graham was formerly the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, identical to Samuel V. Wilson. He had the same job. He's now chairman of Coalition for Strategic Defense Initiative. He shares offices with Fritz Kramer of the National Security Council. So these retired generals, retired General Daniel Graham, moves the his agent and partner, moves the NSC, and retired Army Lieutenant General Wilson, Samuel Wilson, former director of Defense Intelligence Agency, currently works as an advisor to Caspar Weinberger. So when you see the retired general, the former CIA, you know that's just a bunch of BS. And the important thing about this article that for the first time that is revealing this network is that I continuously say when people write books or give public lectures and start beating and whipping that old CIA ass, that donkey, just forget about it. Ask them, what about the Defense Intelligence Agency? What about the National Security Council? Because this is the higher echelon that these two men went to from Dallas, Texas, or the people from Washington approached them to do the work. It comes out of the DIA and the NSC and right out of the offices of the Secretary of Defense. These people met a Wayne Long, Lieutenant Colonel Wayne Long. First, Samuel B. Wilson, retired from Defense Intelligence Agency as director. Colonel Long was a senior officer of a top-secret military intelligence unit called Foreign Operations Group, and I'll do more on that later, FOG. Now, remember when General Richard Secord retired in 1983 from the Air Force, and I mentioned this before, he remained in a position to oversee covert activities identical to these men. He served on a non-salaried position as a member of the Pentagon in a group called SOPAG, S-O-P-A-G. That was his modus operandi, SOPAG. It consisted of a panel of, again, retired commando generals to advise Noel Koch. They set up safe houses in London that later worked with Mr. Khashoggi and the Iran arms persons. Koch was Deputy Assistant Defense Secretary in charge of special operations, counterinsurgency, and counterterrorism. So these retired, the word retired, I can't say, enough has nothing to do with being retired. They get themselves off the payroll of the government. So in the event they're caught, the government can have their plausible deniability. We don't know who they are. They used to work for us. We haven't seen them in years. And all they do is change the letterhead of where they go, whether it's F-O-G or S-O-P-O-G. And they're working for the same people with the same bosses, which are Caspar Weinberger and also retired Army Lieutenant General Samuel Wilson of DIA, who's not retired. We'll take a one-minute break and continue with this story, which is a very important first-time revelation of how the commando entrepreneurs work with the highest echelon right up to the Defense Department.